common sense commentary on politics, culture, and current events. If it's on your mind, it's In the News. And now, In the News, with your host, Mike Dakak.
So it turns out there may actually be some truth to this Italy thing. And we don't know how much truth. We don't know who knows about it, who's looking into it, or who doesn't. All of that, I'm sure, is going to come out. We just don't know about it yet. We are, of course, talking about the fact that there are allegations that the election manipulation happened in Italy. It turns out, some people, of course, are doubtful, and some people are calling it a hoax. But it turns out there may actually be something to it. You know, I've been covering the story almost exclusively now for about 10 days since the story first broke. And in that time, we've had no one comment on the story, as I've mentioned to you before. I went through the laundry list of people and agencies and entities that I've reached out to over the last week and a half, close to 2 weeks now. Members of Congress, the State Department, Leonardo SPA, Justice Department, the list goes on and on. And the members of Congress that I've reached out to actually are people that Maria Zach over at Nations in Action, who's kind of spearheading this investigation stateside, at least in an unofficial capacity. She's not affiliated with the government in any way. But the members of Congress that I've reached out to are people that Maria Zach says she's actually delivered the affidavits to. And I would just reach out to them and I would just say, hey, listen, I'm just looking for confirmation that you are in receipt of this affidavit. Complete radio silence. No one wants to come anywhere. You know, it's interesting. When you have where we are now and you go back, you kind of replay the tape of the last 3 or 4 years. You go back over the stories of the last several years. You begin to see how things fit into place when you have the benefit of hindsight. When you have the benefit of knowing where exactly it was coming from and what the point of all of it was, you go back and you begin to see the patterns. I guess they were always there. You just didn't know. You didn't have the tie that bound, in other words. But first of all, in that time that I've been covering the story, my website has been going down almost on a daily basis, something that hasn't happened before. And you don't want to get too conspiratorial. But, you know, as Steve Bannon over at the War Room Pandemic likes to say, there are no conspiracies, but there are no coincidences. In the time I've been covering, my website has been going down almost on a daily basis. Yesterday was the first day in maybe a week that I didn't see any outages. If you all saw some outages, please let me know. But I didn't see any outages on the site yesterday, and I'm pretty much on it all day, as you may or may not imagine. Well, what happened the day before yesterday? I actually went public and posted on my social media that ever since I started covering Italygate, my site has been going down. What do you know? The following day, everything is back to normal and everything is all right. I also had something very peculiar happen to me yesterday. Someone took to my Twitter account and doxed me. Well, I think they think that they doxed me. They weren't really doxing me at all. They posted my full legal name on Twitter. They were... I'm sorry, I kind of got a kick out of it. They replied to me that and posted my legal name, which is Muhammad, on Twitter, as if I'm hiding that. I don't hide that. I actually go by Muhammad most, if not all the time now. It's just that every asset I have having to do with the show, all my author pages, my URLs, the graphics, everything says Mike, so I keep it that way. Actually, when I first, to tell you guys the full story, when I first started this podcast way back when, and I've, you know, I started this podcast almost 10 years ago now. You know, time flies. It's going to be 10 years in March that I posted my first episode. And of course, when I first started, I wasn't posting regularly. I would post an episode and then come back 2 or 3 months later and post again. I really didn't put the time and the effort into it that I wish I had looking back into it now. Maybe my audience would be a little bit bigger, but that's okay. When I first started, I actually had a nom de guerre way back when, a pen name. I called myself Terrence McAndrews. Don't ask. There's no significance to the name. It was made up out of whole cloth, and I'm kind of embarrassed to, you know, whenever I think about it now. But speaking into a microphone and then publishing that content out to the public, to the entire world. I mean, folks, when you publish, when you're a content creator, you have people listening to you in Tibet. You have people listening to you in India, in Japan, in Saudi Arabia, in Norway, in Argentina. I mean, it's humbling. And I don't have, you know, a large following. Y'all are part of the select few. Y'all are ahead of the curve. So I don't know how those larger podcasts with the millions and millions of downloads do it. They probably hit the record button and stop about a dozen times before they finish an episode and have enough confidence in it to publish it. I have enough of an audience where I feel an obligation and I feel satisfaction when publishing, a responsibility, but small enough where I can still be myself, and I'm grateful for that. If the audience got any larger, you know, that's the one thing I wouldn't want to change. But anyway, I was so freaked out about the thought of that, that I didn't use my real name. And, but then, you know, after that, I was like, you know, this is completely silly. And I remember, not to go too far on a tangent here, but I remember, I guessed it a couple of times on another show. This Woman's Words with Kay Thomas. Really sweet woman. Look her up and see what she's about. Her politics are more to the left. And this is before I was red-pilled. So I was on that show a couple of times. And she kept calling me Terrence because that's how she knew me. And that made me more uncomfortable than the thought of publishing under my real name, than the fear of publishing under my real name. So I've been using my real name ever since. You know, my parents came to this country in 1971 from Egypt almost 50 years ago. I was born a few years later. My mom, when it came time to put me in school, registered me as Mike so I wouldn't feel left out. Not sure if that was the right decision or not. Not sure if I had to go back all, do it all over again, if I would do that or if I would want her to do that. Not sure if I had kids and sent them off to school, if I would do something like that. But that's what happened. And so I've been Mike ever since. Well, this person tries to dox me by posting my real name as if that's supposed to scare me or embarrass me or something like that. Well, that just confirmed to me that there was something there, that there's something here. Remember, folks, they don't come after you for getting it wrong. They come after you for getting it right. I actually reached out. What this person doesn't know is that I actually reached out to a source of mine the night before. And I was like, hey, you know, what do you think about all this Italy stuff? She's someone who used to work in the intelligence community. And she said, you know, Mike, I really don't know. It's plausible, but I don't have any inside info for you. I'm sorry. And I said, okay, well, I'm just going to keep plugging away. The next morning, I hop on Twitter, and that's the first thing I see. And so I'm not, you know, here trying to be a tough guy, and I'm not, you know, trying to change the world, and I'm not trying to be defiant. But the thing is that you try to be as tough as you have to be able to look at myself in the mirror, look at yourself in the mirror. And so if someone was trying to tell me something, I think that message came through loud and clear with that, you know, the confluence of events there. And that message, I think, was keep your head down and stay the course, which is not all that difficult to do, remaining interested and engaging in the subject matter, because knowing, as I said, knowing where we ended up, when you go back and you see where we've come, there are a lot of pieces that begin to fit together. You know, when you have operations like this, which is, you know, maybe if it all turns out to be true, one of the, if not maybe the most sophisticated intel operation ever conducted. But when you have something like this of this magnitude, they have to be run by highly vetted folks. They have to be folks who are able to absorb any exposure that might come from it, any ill effects that might come from it. People who have power, people who have been around the block a few times, and people who can be trusted, right? To follow through on the agenda and to not talk and to follow orders and do what they're tasked to do. People in the club, we'll call them. That's why you see the same names and the same faces pop up in different positions within the power structure all over the world. Now, William Lynn, in the research I was doing this week, William Lynn III, a fellow by the name of William Lynn III, was once so in demand by the Obama administration that President Obama, Lynn, garnered an ethics waiver to become Obama's Deputy Secretary of Defense. That request was made in the opening days of President Obama's administration in 2009, 3 days after Obama was inaugurated. He grants this guy a waiver. In November 2009, just days after winning the election, I think within a week of President Obama winning the election, so he's President-elect Obama at the time, he comes forward and he pledges to bar people from working in his administration who had worked as lobbyists in the previous 2 years. So if you were a lobbyist, you'd have to leave the lobbying industry for at least 2 years before being eligible to join the Obama administration. And that sounded great at the time, right? We're cutting down the revolving door and we're starting to get the money out of politics, and this is great, and look how transparent and hope and change, and Obama is going to change the world, and everybody applauded, and this is fantastic. Well, Obama chooses to grant this guy, William Lynn III, a waiver 3 days after being inaugurated. John McCain, who we now know is a globalist who was in the club himself, said at the time, "I applaud the policy, but I just hoped that President Obama wouldn't find it so necessary to change it or to backtrack on it so soon." Lynn, of course, did have champions in Congress, though. Senate Armed Services Committee Chairman at the time, Carl Levin, came forward and said he's looking forward to prompt consideration by the Senate. Well, who is this guy Lynn? Lynn at the time had been a lobbyist with Raytheon. Raytheon is the U.S.-based global defense contractor. Raytheon has, and still does have, by the way, billions of dollars in Pentagon contracts for weapons programs, like the Army's Patriot missile system and the Navy's Tomahawk missile. In 2009, it was also developing a global position satellite communication system for the Air Force. Lynn oversaw Raytheon lobbyists during his time there. He also lobbied Congress himself. At the Department of Defense under Obama, he led the Pentagon's cybersecurity efforts. Why is that relevant? Well, because today, William Lynn is the head of Leonardo DRS. Leonardo DRS is the U.S. subsidiary of Leonardo SPA. Leonardo SPA is the billion-dollar Italian defense contractor that is, of course, at the center of all of these Italygate accusations. The accusations are that intelligence operatives working in Italy conspired to manipulate vote counts in the November 3rd U.S. election, and it was carried out in several locations in Italy, using, among other infrastructure, satellites owned and operated by Leonardo. Lynn served, and by the way, this operation was allegedly carried out, oversaw by General Claudio Graziano. Graziano is the head of the European Union's military command at this point. I reached out to him. He's the only one, through a spokesperson, that responded. And they called the allegations outlandish or, you know, crazy or whatever their exact language was. They denied it. But Graziano is allegedly a member of the board at Leonardo. He denies that as well. Well, this guy Lynn, who's the head of the U.S. subsidiary of Leonardo, he also served in the President Clinton administration. He was the Undersecretary of Defense Comptroller from 1997 to 2001. In other words, he oversaw the Pentagon's budget, and he oversaw all of the acquisitions and all of the contracts and all that kind of stuff at the Pentagon. When Clinton leaves office, Lynn leaves the Department of Defense. He joins Raytheon in 2002. He worked in the private sector until President Obama assumed office and then once again joined the Pentagon. Lynn has also been associated with the Center for American Progress, which is a progressive think tank. He's also on the board of directors of the Atlantic Council. The Atlantic Council is an organization of foreign policy professionals that advocates for globalist policies. He's quote-unquote in the club. Gianni De Gennaro, which I spoke to you about last week, the former head of Leonardo, he was given the FBI's highest award in December 2006 for cooperation with the agency. He was a very anti-mafia guy, and that led him to form a transatlantic relationship with the FBI here. In 2006, he's given the FBI's highest award. That award was given to Gennaro by the head of the FBI at the time, Robert Mueller. Mueller, of course, would go on to serve as special counsel, investigating the claims of collusion between the 2016 Trump campaign and the Russian government. It was the first time the award was given to one of the FBI's international partners. De Gennaro was appointed head of Leonardo in July 2013. He was replaced as head of Leonardo in May 2020 by a fellow by the name of Luciano Carta. Luciano Carta is the former chief of AISE, Italy's Foreign Intelligence Service. Again, in the club. Mueller handed down dozens of indictments for Russian nationals at the end of his investigation, even though evidence now exists that no crimes were committed and that people at the FBI may have known that no crimes were actually committed while they were carrying out the investigation. Well, Mueller seemingly ignored clues of Italy's involvement in Spygate and instead kept the focus of his probe squarely on Russia. I mean, the individual at, I mean, how did this all begin? The individual at the genesis of the scandal of Spygate is a Maltese professor, this name you've heard before, Joseph Mifsud, right? Mueller's team found Mifsud to be the original source of claims that Russia had, quote unquote, dirt on President Trump's opponent in 2016, Hillary Clinton, in the form of the thousands of emails. Mifsud told George Papadopoulos, the Trump campaign foreign policy advisor at the time, that all these emails existed. This was in April 2016 in London. Well, Mifsud, despite being the person at the center of the all these allegations, the entire story, and mentioned in Mueller's report dozens of times, I counted 60, some people count a little bit less, I think some people count more, I counted 60, was never indicted by Mueller. Now, equally baffling is that a fellow by the name of Vincenzo Scotti, he is an individual who headed Link University, that's the university where Mifsud was teaching at the time during his correspondence with Papadopoulos, he's mentioned once in a footnote in the entire two-volume, 400-plus page report released by Mueller in March 2019. At least I only found them once. If you find them more than once, please let me know. Scotti, Vincenzo Scotti, is a former interior minister and a minister of foreign affairs in Italy. He founded Link University with Mifsud, their partners. Mifsud's attorney, Stephen Rowe, has said that Scotti was one of two people who suggested Mifsud introduce Papadopoulos to his contacts in Russia. Rowe has also said that Scotti recommended to Mifsud that he, quote-unquote, disappear and stay for some time in a safe location. This is after it becomes known that the FBI had questioned Mifsud. And Mifsud's whereabouts have not been known since at least 2019. Now, bizarrely, Mifsud's passport was found in Camara de Lobos, a popular tourist town in Portugal, in August of 2017, 3 months before he disappeared, but 6 months after he was reportedly interviewed by the FBI. In January 2018, when asked why he disappeared by the man who would become his attorney, Stephen Rowe, Mifsud reportedly said that the head of the Italian Secret Services contacted the president of Link Campus, Vincenzo Scotti, and recommended that the professor disappear. Maria Zach says Obama and Renzi, a fellow Matteo Renzi, the former Italian prime minister, conspired to unravel the Trump presidency as Obama was preparing to leave office in 2017, first through Spygate, and then ultimately by the vote manipulation campaign in 2020, Italygate. Obama and Renzi were very close. They enjoyed a close working relationship while both were in office. Obama's last state dinner was held in Renzi's honor back in 2016. In May 2017, when all of this was kind of coming to a head, Obama met privately with Renzi while visiting Italy for a climate conference. There's actually a photograph of the two men wrapped in a what looks to be a very warm embrace, like they were long-lost lovers in Italian media. Well, in March 2019, Renzi said he was a, quote, lucky man for having worked with Barack Obama and not Donald Trump. In October 2019, Renzi threatened to sue George Papadopoulos over allegations that Renzi was involved in the whole Mifsud Roman University thing to try and entrap the Trump campaign. All these guys are in the club. Just today, as a matter of fact, the government in Italy collapsed. There's a huge deep state battle going on in the country right now. Italy's government is led by Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte, who up until recently was friendly with Donald Trump. Well, Matteo Renzi took his Italy Alive party and quit the coalition. He's attacking Conte for not handling the COVID-19 pandemic well enough, and so he quit the coalition. Now, Renzi's party is small, but Conte relies on it to maintain his majority in parliament. The thing in Italy that you have to understand is that the prime minister, and from what I'm understanding from people who are explaining this to me, the prime minister in Italy controls the deep state apparatus. It's much more of an administration thing over there. Here, it's a little bit more consistent. There, it depends on who controls the government. That's who sets the agenda for what the intelligence services' priorities are. And so is there a battle going on now to keep secrets from being revealed, to keep things hidden, for making sure people who are in the club are in the right positions? I mean, you know, none of this may be easily provable, but it's not impossible to prove either. there's an attack. I mean, if we kind of step back and broaden out the view here and the perspective, there's an attack on populism that's taking place all over the world. There's an attack on people being loyal to their countries instead of the globalist infrastructure. That's what this is all about. It's about, I mean, just this week, Trump was impeached again in, I mean, just a bizarre display of political opportunism. Why are they so afraid? I mean, if we're to believe that he has days left, why is he being impeached? He's being impeached to make sure he never comes back. Why is it so important to have Trump never come back? What this is all about is making sure that people are never again successful in choosing leadership that is more loyal to them than to the globalists. That's what this is all about. And once you understand that, every move, every piece of information that you see on the news or that crosses your feed on social media, it all begins to make sense. And as it relates to the U.S., it seems there's a lot more to this Italy thing than is being looked into. No one even wants to look into it, it seems. You know, there's a hashtag trending right now on social media, all roads lead to Rome. Not exactly sure how true that is yet, but we're continuing down this path. We're walking down it until we reach the end of the path, one way or the other. Well, that's our show for today. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have any thoughts on any of the issues we discussed, drop me a line. You can reach me at comments@itnshow.com. That's comments@itnshow.com. Thanks again for listening, everyone. Until next time, take care of yourselves.
If it's on your mind, it's in the news. Subscribe to In the News on both iTunes and on Stitcher Radio. This has been In the News.